This is lecture 2.3 in the early lectures by Rudolf Steiner called Christian Mystery. 2.3 is entitled The Promise of the Spirit of Truth, given on March 8, 1907 in Cologne. The truths of religious scriptures have derived from the depths of wisdom, but many people come and say, quote, what you present to us is very complicated. We prefer that the gospel be simple, for great truths should not be complicated, unquote. In a certain sense, such people are right. But wisdom, as well as simple thinking, must also be able to find the deepest truths. The perspective from which we consider these things simply cannot be high enough. In the future, merely convenient viewpoints will have to be left behind if we are to comprehend the deepest knowledge with the appropriate seriousness. Today we want to understand the promise of the Spirit of Truth. With these words we are dealing with a secret initiation. Quote, those who have my commandments and keep them, they are the ones who love me. Unquote, John 14:21. Love here points to a trusting relationship between teacher and pupil, which is esoteric. The most profound secrets of the soul are transmitted person to person. The words of the Bible we wish to clarify today are, quote, let your heart not become troubled. Have faith in the power that leads you to the Father and that leads you to me. In my Father's house there are many dwellings. John 14:1-2. And quote, if you truly love me, you will take my aims into your will, and I will pray the Father, and he will send you another comforter, the giver of spirit courage, who will be with you for this whole earthly eon, the Spirit of Truth. Not all people can receive him. They do not see him and do not recognize him. But you know him, for he guides you as a higher being above you, and he will enter your innermost heart. John 14, verses 15 through 17. And also this quote, those who have my commandments and keep them are those who love me, and those who love me will be loved by my Father, and I will love them and reveal myself to them. Judas, not Iscariot, said to him, quote, Lord, how is it that you will reveal yourself to us and not to the world? Unquote. Jesus answered him, quote, those who love me will keep my word, and my Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. Unquote. John chapter 14, verses 21 through 23. Father is the name for the soul's innermost power. It is to be manifested to the most intimate disciples. Judas asks, quote, how is it that you will reveal yourself to us, the closest disciples, and not to the world? Unquote. With this question, Judas is stating directly that something in the mystery should be revealed to the intimate disciples. Jesus said, quote, we will make our home with the Father. Unquote. That was most important with the outpouring of the Spirit, which began with the words, quote, let your heart not become troubled. Unquote. Christ is going away in order to prepare a dwelling for his closest disciples. Quote, in my Father's house there are many dwellings. Unquote. The degree of consciousness once achieved by a human being can never be lost. We must give up all other ideas. People often wallow in the notion of merging into a, quote, cosmic consciousness of the all, unquote, imagining that to be salvation. There is no such, quote, cosmic consciousness of the all, unquote, and there never will be. Human beings are now attaining the capacity to say I, capital. The more they say I and work through this I on their three lower members, the astral, etheric, and physical bodies, the stronger the I becomes and the more they develop themselves for the future. In this way, human beings can continually become selfless because that is what they want. One day all human beings will have arrived at the pinnacle of the I being's development. Nevertheless, they can selflessly grasp the spirit of community. We are sitting together here in this room, and the common spirit here is like a point from which everything flows forth. But this common spirit can ray forth from every heart voluntarily and fill the room. Consider the way God is reflected in the world. He poured all of his life into his reflection through the great sacrifice. Now we want to imagine how our lives could also be poured out into innumerable mirror images. so that each individual mirror image would say, quote, I and my origin are one, unquote. In this way, all human beings once arose like mirror images from the womb of God. They are ultimately empty I-beings with transformed astral, etheric, and physical bodies. And they enter the spiritual world and speak the deepest secret of their beings, quote, I and the Father are one, unquote. We look into distant times. There was still much volcanic activity on Earth during the Lemurian Age. Completely different beings lived at that time. It was then that human beings received what they were to work on as soul. When we go even further into the past, we see the human being's soul above and the physical body below, united as one being in the bosom of God. The physical stream below was then left to itself to develop into the, quote, animal human beings, unquote, of the Lemurian Age. The aspect above was developed further in soul and spirit. The body below first had to be prepared to receive the soul from above. The spirit that reigned over the common origin of both the body and the soul is the Father Spirit, the Father. The spirit that reigned below, as the spirit above went its separate way, is the Son Spirit, the Son. And the spirit that reigned above in the soul realm until he could descend into the physical is the Holy Spirit. When the first soul incarnated during the Lemurian Age, there was an outpouring of the Spirit, quote, and God formed the man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being, unquote. Genesis 2:7. That was the first outpouring of the Spirit, an unconscious outpouring. The human being lived then for a long time in a dreamlike state. Only during the second half of the Atlantean Age did we acquire the capacity to calculate, think logically, and observe relationships in the outer world. During the first half of the Atlantean Age, human beings saw each other as a colored cloud. If the other person was an enemy, the cloud looked reddish-brown. A violet-reddish-brown announced a friendly person. Other things were perceived in this way as well. When a golden-yellow cloud arose as a kind of misty form between the astral and the physical, it was a sign that a useful metal was deposited there. A dull bluish-red cloud with the odd outlines around it, such as only a mineral could have, indicated a useless metal. Human beings were increasingly defined and differentiated from their environment. They enclosed their feelings within their skin, and external physical perception was developed. The human being of the earliest Atlantean times perceived like a fish or snail does today, though not like a turtle or crocodile. Because the human being began to breathe through lungs, a new perception began. The formation of blood and the activity of the eye within were also connected with this. The eye left a residue that affects the blood even today, for example, when we blush with shame or pale with fear. The direct effects of the eye being's activity is seen here. This remains from a time when the eye affected the blood directly. The inner power of the eye is expressed today only through such gestures as blushing or blanching. The human being can express enthusiasm today by gesturing with the hands. Back then, an impulse of the eye worked through the blood to shape organs out of the body. The fingers, for example, came into being in this way. By the end of the Atlantean Age, human beings were similar to modern human beings. Blood ties were stronger than now, back then. There was a much greater connection between blood relatives. Allow me to give you an example. Two modern writers have created excellent portrayals of farmers, but in very different ways. Farmers are presented as sharply defined, chiseled figures by Ludwig Anzengruber. Footnote: Ludwig Anzengruber, 1838 to 1889, playwright and novelist from Vienna, who wrote realistic plays of peasant life. The success of an early play, Der Pfarrer von Kirchfeld, the pastor of Kirkfield, allowed him to devote his life to writing. End footnote. On the other hand, Peter Rosegger brings together many individual characteristics to create a whole. Footnote 11. Peter P. K. Rosegger, 1843 to 1918, Austrian poet and novelist who wrote verse in the Styrian dialect and novels depicting provincial life. End footnote. He takes notes on his observations and uses them when writing. Rosiger wondered how Anzengruber was able to portray farmers at all, since he had never lived with them nor ever observed them. Anzengruber responded that he was able to portray farmers so well because he did not know them. But all his ancestors were farmers, therefore the way of the farmer lived in his blood. He described the farmers his ancestors had known, writing from the wisdom in his blood. In much earlier times, humanity included many smaller groups. If we read Tacitus's book on Germania, we find many small blood-related tribes listed there, for which blood ties signified something very special. Among the patriarchs in the Old Testament, people always married within their own tribes. The same blood always flowed in the veins and the memory of the descendants from ancient ancestors. The descendants remembered their ancestors just as we remember our childhood. 900 years after Adam, his descendants could still remember what Adam had experienced. This explains the great ages of those mentioned in the Bible. As far back as could be remembered, the eye being extending through the generations was known as, quote-unquote, Adam. A common eye lived in the tribe through the blood. Consequently, atonement could be achieved only through blood, when blood had been spilled. And the entire tribe sought revenge for the blood of a single member through a vendetta or blood feud. Marriage expanded beyond the closed family, gradually including others. Tribes became international. The principle of pure humanity won the upper hand. The sun principle is active in the physical realm, in the love of family, maintained through the blood. But the soul is to become increasingly individualized, so that the blood flows in larger and larger circles, constantly distancing itself from the community of the tribe. All ancient states were built on the principle of familial blood. The Ten Commandments of the Hebrews are tribal commandments. What applied to the Jewish people did not yet apply to all of humankind. Then the Spirit of the Son appeared on earth in Christ, and his blood flowed. The blood that earlier had created only small bands was shed. This achieved an outflowing of all the small bands into a family of all human beings. Previously, the eye feeling had been narrowly limited and could not yet say, quote, those who do not leave father, mother, wife, child, brother, and sister, as well as their own life, cannot be my disciple, unquote. Such self-seeking egoism had to flow from the wounds of the Redeemer. The ability to love was achieved in the flowing blood of Christ, and with it, the ability to overcome community based on blood, tribe, and ethnicity. If we could have caught the drops of blood on the cross, we would truly have the fluid that transforms people in this way. What must be achieved is that we find a connection to all human beings, so that not only brother and sister can love one another, but human beings can love one another. The physical blood that flowed from the wounds of Christ is the incarnation of this principle of salvation. This blood is a significant symbol of redemption. People should find again the Spirit in its fullness. At one time they had this Spirit, but only in a dull and vague way. Then it assumed the form and the way people see the world today. But we see only one aspect today, only this side of the threshold. We are separated by something like a veil from seeing spiritual life. Now, by means of our individuality, which makes us I-beings, we should be brought back to a broader and fuller consciousness. This is why the blood of Christ flowed from the limits of a tribe into the world at large. The cross was able to do this. His blood flowed out from the cross to all of humanity. At the same time, however, the cross has also led to the development of the I, and thus it has become narrower and increasingly individualized. Christianity brought us all of this. Egoism necessarily escalates when people are left to their own resources, without tribal connection, but with an intensified I consciousness. Jesus Christ foresaw this. He saw materialism coming and set Christianity as a bastion against it. During ancient times, community based on blood was the foundation for everything. This may be seen clearly in the prevalence of ancestor cults. There are many legends connected with ancestral heroes, for example, Theseus or Cadmus. This was the principle for laws and political hierarchies. Then external institutions began to set standards for community life, which started only with the spread of Christianity. What do we find today on the international scene? A principle more powerful than that of the state, the great international powers that rule the world today. They are called finance, commerce, industry, and so on. They are no longer connected with the old community of blood. The other side of this development is materialism. Egoistic intelligence lives in machines. How very differently the Greeks portrayed their god as Zeus, recalling that the father principle is behind all existence. Where do we find anything divine in public life today? Machines, railway, and so on, all serve egoism. In the future, this will still have a special role. In the war of all against all, it will reach its ultimate. Although Christ created the bond of unity for all human beings, a second accomplishment must nevertheless be added to that of the Redeemer. The feelings that led one human being to another live in those who feel drawn to Christ. His is the greatest deed of connection. It has the ability to bring spirit together again with the physical. Today, human dominion over the physical still serves egoism. One day we will use it in the service of the Spirit. The Spirit must be united with the Son, so that both arise united in the Father. Christ says, quote, "No one comes to the Father except through me," unquote. John 14:16. Everyone should say, quote, "I am like grapes on the vine, Christ is my vine," unquote. See John 15:5. Thus, Christ overcomes egoism in the organism of humankind. The Father Spirit, the Spirit of our common origin, must enter into the individual I-beings. The I then works on the Father principle. Then every I-being creates its own dwelling. Yet all are united through the Christ principle. Christ said, quote, "In my Father's house there are many dwellings," unquote, John 14:2. He was speaking of the dwellings that I-beings build for themselves. Christ, however, must prepare those dwelling places. But the Spirit who unites humanity must also come. That is the Spirit of truth. Spiritual science should help people to understand what human beings have in common. It should bring a higher wisdom, the Spirit of truth. Various opinions will continue as long as the highest knowledge has not been attained. The Gnostics referred to mysticism as, quote, "mathesis," unquote, M-A-T-H-E-S-I-S, because in mathematics no one can claim an opinion different from those of anyone else. Two scholars can never have different opinions concerning a mathematical sentence, since its truth is never a matter of human wishes. When it comes to great wisdom, we must free ourselves of what we desire. Only those willing to study the Spirit of truth entirely without personal wishes are mature enough to receive it. The highest wisdom unites people with no personal speculation. The Spirit of truth must shine out over human beings. Then, even though they are scattered in their various dwellings, the Spirit of truth will unite them. In order to fit spirit into the house that the I builds for itself, the common Spirit of truth must rule those I beings. Christ promised his disciples the Spirit of truth on Whitsunday. The disciples then spoke in many tongues, and all the various nations learned to understand one another. Regardless of how great egoism may still become, every I being who participates in the Spirit of truth will have the spirit of community. Anyone who strives toward this goal must live in the spirit of John's gospel. That is true spiritual science. Just as all plants incline to the sun, just as they all grow toward it in no matter what their location, so too all I-beings will turn to the sun, S-U-N, to the spiritual light of truth. End of lecture 2.3.